Good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever you're listening to this podcast. This is the Brief Nerdy Podcast. I am your host, Ryan Bird. Joining once again is my good friend, Trent.
Hello.
And joining us once again is our also good friend, Ted.
Hey, guys.
How's everybody doing?
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Excellent. You're channeling your inner Mr. Burns there. I see, Trent. Or not.
Sorry, I muted myself because I was typing. I'm kind of always channeling my inner Mr. Burns, and inner meaning, like, super poor. But, like, I've got his mannerisms, but not any of the money to back it up.
That's sad.
That's kind of important.
It's much better to be the other way around.
Right? I'd much rather be a rich, nice guy.
All right, well, let's get things started with our round robin this week, continuing our Halloween theme, but we're in October now.
Woo, October!
Yeah, time to post out the Christmas questions, right?
No, that's November's topic.
All right, well, this week's topic is the candy we were always the happiest to receive in our trick-or-treat bag. So, you know, we all had our candy that we'd give. We'd be like, we don't want that. But, you know, when you saw that candy enter your bag as a child, what was your absolute favorite? And it's pretty much just another way of saying what's your favorite candy, but, you know.
100 grand more. No doubt. 100 grand bars would not make it home.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
They'd go in the bag, and they'd go in my mouth, and they just wouldn't make it home.
It's weird. I don't think I got 100 gram bars very often.
I know, exactly. But when I did, it's like the Holy Grail.
Nice. For me, I'd have to go just the giant Reese's. Not the giant, but just the whole peanut butter cups, you know? The single peanut butter cup singles. You know those, they have those like those tiny like fun size ones that are like the size of like a large marble.
Yeah.
They're okay, but like the chocolate to peanut butter ratio is just not quite there.
It's not right. You're right.
So, but to get a whole size single peanut butter cup was mine.
See, mine were, there's always this one house in this nice-ish neighborhood a few blocks away where the lady would always give the full-size Snicker bars, and she was the best.
Full size is so cheating.
Huh?
Full size is so cheating, but that's okay.
It is not. You just stock up, like, a few weeks beforehand, or few months, or however long candy lasts.
All right, we're glad we're just adults now. We can go and gorge ourselves on candy whenever we want.
I know. I was thinking about this question earlier, and I was like, you know what? I could just go to Walmart and buy a handful of any candy I feel like.
Woo!
And I adulting. Don't. And it makes me sad.
Yep. Life's cruel like that.
It is. I have to pay for things like rent and insurance and
ridiculous. Calorie counting. Ugh. All right. Well, what are you playing this week? I'll go ahead and get it started off. I didn't play much. I did a lot of traveling this week, but I did finish off Sonic. So my opinion of it is pretty much the same as it has been on the previous podcasts. You know, I thought it was a really good faithful recreation of the best features of the Sega Genesis Sonic games. But that being said, I wasn't a big fan of them back then. And so, you know, I was pretty neutral on the game at this point. So, but I'm happy for the Sonic fans who love the Sega Genesis era Sonic games, and happy they were able to have a game like that they could call their own. I would be just as ecstatic if they made like a new Super Mario Brothers game, but it was off the same engine as Super Mario World. You know, I'd be going crazy. So I could appreciate their happiness and fandom. So
nice.
I just purchased Cuphead today, so I will be playing that soon.
I hear that tutorial level's killer.
Yep. You gotta learn to jump and dash.
Yeah.
It's like patting your head and rubbing your tummy at the same time. It's a lot more difficult than you'd think.
I know. I saw one guy try it, and he just couldn't do it. It was just so good luck.
Yeah, I'll do my best. if I complete it, I'll maybe can become a games journalist because I meet that qualification.
Does Ted have any idea what you're talking about?
It's a joke, Ted. There's this thing went off where this guy who worked at Polygon, he couldn't get through the tutorial, or at least it took him like forever to get through the tutorial of Cuphead, even though it was very, very, very simple. He just like couldn't grasp it, like couldn't jump and dash at the same time, like to get over this little wall.
Okay, thank you.
So,
sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. I appreciate you filling in the listeners who may not be, you know, up to date.
That's a good point. So, you're welcome, listeners.
Oh, goodness.
All right, Trent, what about you?
So I'm still playing a lot of Ark and XCOM 2. I'm enjoying that. And then this week I noticed in my Steam downloads that the Star Trek mod for Stellaris had come up with a big update. And so I looked into it, and you can now play as the Borg, which is super exciting.
Nice.
So it's funny that it's timed almost perfectly, and I don't know if they did this on purpose, because the new mod I don't think uses a ton of the same functionality as the new update, but Stellaris also released a new $10 story pack / mini DLC where they add in the ability to play as a fully customized AI race from the start. Like there's kind of like an ascendance path you can take in other playthroughs where you become like cybernetic and then fully AI later. But yeah, so that those both happen. So I want to play through both sides of that, the regular game and then the Star Trek mod, which is super fun.
Nice.
I can't wait to conquer the Delta Quadrant and then go take on the Federation. Super excited.
Yeah, what about you, Ted?
I'm currently playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm because it gives me that same like building up feel, but episodic as League of Legends, but in about like a half or even like a third of the time. So, because I'm trying to work on my business, and so I'm like, I need a break, but I don't want to dedicate a whole hour. So Heroes of the Storm kind of scratches that itch.
Nice.
Very nice. So a MOBA that I've never played before, but one that I think I would probably like the most based on descriptions. So
yeah, it's really great for like teamwork-oriented players, but not really great for general MOBA players who like to, you know, carry. Because it like you level all at the same time, and so your whole team is the same level. Right. So it's quite difficult to like race ahead and be, you know, dominant in the game as a single player.
Nice. All right, well, on to what we've been watching. I'll start off again talking a little bit about the new Star Trek. I'm pretty neutral on it. I don't dislike it, but I don't really love it either. My biggest complaint is just the characters right now. I don't really like any of them, even like the quirky, cute character we're supposed to like. It's just eh. But she is probably the most likable still because everyone else is pretty much an a-hole. So that kind of makes it hard to watch on some aspects. But I do like the fresh new direction they're going and the serializedness it seems to be going in, even though, you know, Star Trek has done that in the past. I haven't seen a Star Trek that does that, so... And I'm intrigued with the plot that's going on. I just hope that, you know, the main character, at least, and some of the supporting characters, you know, grow a heart and become people. Yeah. go ahead, Trent.
Yeah. I'd say I think my favorite is the alien guy. Is it
Ditto?
I think.
Yeah, Solarian.
Yeah. Yeah, he's easily my favorite. I think he's the most believable. He's the most easy to not equate with. I can, my brain died.
Empathize?
Yeah, there you go. Empathize with. It's funny, like it's always interesting how it's like the alien or non-human character who's like looking on to the mostly human crew that you can usually empathize the most with. I think that at least that is going well so far.
Well, I mean, yeah, not only that, but I mean, he can be, even when he's like a jerk, he's not really a jerk. Like he's really just kind of told it like it was, you know, like you are dangerous. It's right. Kind of just what he said. But at the same time, he even admits, you know, when he was wrong or when he's proud of someone.
Yeah.
You know, so it could be like, oh, you know, like he could be like, oh, I'm proud of you. Another character would be like, whatever. I don't care. Good job, I guess. You know. So.
Yeah, everybody else on the ship is like super moody and gritty and dark, and I'm like, this is not going to work for very long. Like, I get that your eyes are like in a war, and like bad stuff keeps happening, but like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm hoping they lighten up a little bit.
But if you do want to show with a start, oh, go ahead, Ted.
How many episodes are we in? I'm sorry, I'm not up to date.
Only three.
Three? Okay.
Yeah.
And so all three episodes have kind of followed this train of dark and gritty, kind of how our current movie scene, general scene is. Is that right?
I wouldn't go so much in the movie end, because I think modern day movies are more happy-go-lucky fun, like the J.J. Abrams movies and Guardians of the Galaxy and such. This seemed like it was a
mid-2000s
dark, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's not like Batman v Superman dark. I'd say it's maybe like Batman Returns dark.
That's pretty dang dark. Sure. That's way darker than Batman v Superman.
Is it? I don't think Batman Returns is that dark. I mean, he yells at people about drugs.
Are we talking about the same Batman? Are you talking about Batman Begins?
Begins, yes.
There we go.
Many Batman movies with a verb next to it, like
Batman, because Batman Returns is like the one with Catwoman and the Penguin.
Okay, yeah, that was pretty dark. Sorry, no, the one with
I would agree. Batman Begins about that level. Yeah,
that one. Yes.
I could just imagine that black guck spewing out a Penguin, and oh yeah, this is dark at all.
But there's kitties, so it's okay. That's why I love it so much.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty drastic turn for Star Trek, or is that how it's kind of been progressing? I'm not really up to date, so...
It's a pretty hard departure, but for me, it's... I don't know, I don't hate it. It's definitely a different direction, because Star Trek is usually about, like, hopefulness and, like, you know... The future where humanity's got it all together and we're not a bunch of like racist a-holes.
Yeah, like these prisoners get put up on the ship and the security officer is like, who brought in the garbage? It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they take them to the mess hall and they're like, Starfleet says we have to feed the animals, so here's your dinner. And I'm like, wow, okay. So this is like the transitional period before Starfleet kind of, you know, becomes nice, because even like the human prisoners are like trash talking the Andorians and the Vulcans and stuff, and I'm like, ah, good old humanity.
Yeah, do we know the official like place in the chronology that this is supposed to take place?
Supposedly it's 20 years before the original series is run.
Prequel.
Yes.
Sorry that I'm not
No, you're good. I'm sure a lot of people are curious about this stuff too. And of course, that aspect has a lot of people very upset about the technology that's being utilized.
See, that doesn't bother me at all. I think it's a dumb complaint.
This kind of stuff that like Kirk didn't have.
See, I think that's a dumb argument. You know, it's 2017. The original show was made in the 60s. Whatever.
Like, yeah, sci-fi should... I mean, even if you're doing a prequel... And like this used to bother me a little bit when I saw how cool the ship looked for Enterprise. But, you know, it's just like your sci-fi should always be a projection of your current into the future. And if they could do what we could do now back in the 60s, they would have done it. So
yeah, I mean, Star Wars did the same thing. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of things do the same thing as well. Just, yeah, it's fine. Get over. Out of valid criticism.
It's one of those things that you kind of glaze over and you just enjoy that there's a new Star Trek on. So that's why.
So, but if you do want a show that feels exactly like Star Trek, you need to watch The Orville. We've watched it a few times. I mean, the past two episodes especially, you know, really call back to The Next Generation, I think, in particular.
Yeah, the Orville is definitely a love letter to 1980s Star Trek.
Isn't it supposed to be a parody, though?
No. And that's the thing that like, a lot of people, I think, got like the wrong idea about.
Well, I think it was marketed that way, because that's how the trailer was like marketed. But it hit some heavy themes and stuff exactly like Star Trek did. It just has a little bit more levity to it, and... I think I mentioned in our previous podcast, but it's like if you had Star Trek, but real 21st century people were on the ship, you know, people making dick jokes or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Joking about how like they're going to have to work overtime because of this emergency that just happened that kind of stuff.
So it's funny, but I would say it's more like 80s Star Trek than it is funny.
Yeah. I think it's like Star Trek with actual humor that lands. So it's been good. I've really enjoyed it. It's probably my at this point, it is definitely my favorite show of this year. Like the new show for this current new season.
It does Star Trek better than Star Trek. So
at the moment, it does, yes. Which is not to say that I'm not enjoying Discovery, because I am. But it's new and different, and I want to see where they're going with it still.
Yep. So other than that, Gotham started a couple weeks ago. There's 2 episodes out, but I watched the first one. It's fine, I guess. Hasn't really done anything super amazing yet. Just, you know, kicking off the new season, but you know, look forward to seeing where it goes. I still don't hate it as much as the CW. Like,
what? Teenage Batman, right?
Say that again?
Gotham, this is about like teenage Batman, is that right?
It's more about Gordon, but a young teenage Bruce Wayne is a character in it.
Okay.
Isn't he, like, I saw the previews. I haven't watched since the beginning of season one. And I don't know if we want to throw some minor spoiler warnings here real quick, but this was in the promotional material everywhere. So Bruce actually is suiting up now, is that right?
He's, so far, as of just the pilot, he's just like putting on like a, not a ski mask, but like a hoodie over his face with holes cut in it, cut out of it.
But like fighting crime and stuff?
Yeah.
Huh. Is it cool or cringeworthy?
Right now it's cringeworthy.
That's too bad.
Because I don't think he's had enough training. He's had some training so far, but not nearly adequate enough for me to have probably like a 16-ish year old, however old he is now, to be taking on thugs and stuff like that.
Especially isn't he like super scrawny too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes, but.
Cool. I'm glad you're liking it though. That's good.
Yeah. Still better than the CW and DC shows. only other thing I want to mention, again, not something I watched, but I did, you know, I did a lot of traveling, so I was able to finish the entirety of the Leia, Princess of Alderaan novel. It was okay. I'd say I probably liked Phasma a little bit more, but it did, you know, provide some insight into 16-year-old Leia's character. You know, it kind of, you know, I would call these minor spoilers, but I don't really think it's something that's worth not saying because it's kind of on the back of the book description, but you know, 16-year-old Leia at that point, she still doesn't know about the rebellion. All she knows is that her parents like start being distant and start going to lots more dinner parties with Mon Mothma and stuff like that. And so Leia has to kind of figure out what's going on and then figure out where she stands in the rebellion once she makes the obvious discovery. And then there's a romantic interest, teenage interest with her as well, kind of thrown in there. And then there's a character you get to know really, really well. It's a, I don't want to say a side character, but not really a main character either. Maybe a supporting character. That's pretty much exactly like Luna Lovegood from Harry Potter. But she's actually Laura Dern's character in the upcoming Last Jedi. So it was interesting to get a little insight on that character before the movie. So
nice.
So yeah, it was pretty good. I believe this week another Star Wars novel comes out. It's the From a Certain Point of View. It's the 40 short stories revolving around characters from A New Hope. And then I still need to read the Battlefront 2 prologue. I plan to read that right before the game comes out. So I basically have a month to read both of these, a little more than a month to read both of these.
Sweet. Well, I mean, you have technically until December to read the first one, right?
Yeah, but I'm getting through these pretty fast. I could generally finish one in a week.
Nice.
So at least that's been, I finished Phasma in a week and then I finished Leia in a week. So, you know, very cool. With a few podcasts sprinkled in there, you know, like maybe 2 weeks for each. So we'll see though. That's about it for me.
Nice. Cool. Well, I'll go ahead and go next. So, obviously, we've talked about Star Trek and Orville already. I'm starting to catch up on my Netflix queue a little bit now that I'm kind of between shows that I am catching up on and the shows that I'm not really putting much effort into catching up on. And so I thought I was getting into House of Cards, but then I got to Netflix and saw the poster for Grace and Frankie, which is a show that I adore. And I hadn't watched season 3 yet, so I'm almost done with season 3 of that. I started it this week.
That's a mood switch.
A little bit. So for those of you who don't know, Grace and Frankie has Lily Tomlin and, of course, I'm going to forget her name right now. It's the same lady that she was in 9 to 5 with. Anyway, it's a comedy about two women whose husbands fall in love with each other, and so they divorce their wives and get married to each other. And so it's these women who are not very close and are kind of thrust together into this weird situation. Jane Fonda. So I don't know how I can remember that name. So it's Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. They become friends over the, you know, gay affair that their husbands have together. And it's just, it's a hilarious, but also sometimes heartbreaking show. And so it's really, really good. I recommend it to everyone.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I've been watching.
All right, Ted, what about you?
I'm currently watching Leverage, which is kind of an older show. Basically, it's like the way I approach it is like Mission Impossible meets Sherlock Holmes, kind of. So basically, a bunch of like master criminals come together to do stunts and heists and things, but generally for the underdog. So, for example, like someone gets, you know, gypped by their insurance company, the team then comes together to make this kind of elaborate plan to make the whole insurance company like go under. And so it's like pretty an interesting. And the good thing about it is that they don't tell you all the steps like while it's happening. So then there's like a twist at the end. You're like, oh, how'd that happen? And then they kind of go through it piece by piece at the end. Kind of reveal all the things that they have to go together. So, yeah, it's fun, cool. Lighthearted. There's some character development that like tries to be dark, but really doesn't stick, which is kind of nice.
Batman Returns dark, or
no, more like there's an alcoholic on the team, and you know he's like tearing his team apart, and they get back together and tear the team apart, things like that. So, yeah,
nice. So, is this on Netflix?
It is on Netflix. We just finished season one last night. There's season two. I don't know how many seasons there are. My wife recommended it, and we started watching it, and I keep coming back for more.
Sweet. So I looked it up for anyone who's curious. Do you want to know how long it goes for?
Sure.
I don't want to ruin something that you were purposely avoiding. Okay.
No, you're not. No.
So apparently it went 5 seasons from 2008 to 2012.
I'm so excited.
Yes. So, yeah, there's that.
Good feeling when you have a show that you love that goes on for that long.
Right, and I mean, this one had something like 12 episodes or so, maybe more. So it's not like they're really short seasons.
That's exciting. I'm always like scared to start a brand new series on Netflix, even if it's already done, because I'm like, what if it's... Because on one side, it's like, what if it's terrible? And on the other side, you're like, oh, crap, what if it's amazing and I have, like, 70 episodes to watch now? So, but yeah, that sounds cool.
You sound cool.
Oh, thanks.
All right, let's get on to the news. So, first off, there was a new big Battlefront trailer. Technically two now, because there's another one today, but... They talked about all the different maps and modes and characters and everything like that. So they basically showed off a lot. You know, they had prequel era maps such as Kamino, Kashyyyk, and Theed. Original trilogy maps like the Death Star 2, Endor, Mos Eisley on Tatooine, Yavin 4, and Hoth. And then for The Force Awakens, they had things like Starkiller Base, Jakku, and Takodana. And then they showed off some like space battle modes, like especially one at the Death Star 2 looked awesome, and one kind of in like an asteroid field with Star Destroyers and stuff. It looks amazing. Like,
it looks amazing. And by that, I mean, did you see those graphics?
Yep. I hope my 980 Ti can still run it at Ultra, or else I'll be very sad.
I'm super happy that I just upgraded my graphics card.
Nice.
This is pretty much this and Destiny were the two games I was aiming for with my 1070, so I'm excited.
Well, the original Battlefront was the reason I did a big upgrade then to the 980 Ti.
Ooh, so somebody might be getting a 1080 Ti, is that what I'm hearing?
I'm still going to wait for the next gen, regardless. I'll just be slightly sad if it doesn't hold up.
Oh.
But that being said, I'm pretty sure it will, because their games in the past have been extremely well optimized.
Yeah. Well, so. I mean, it's not going to look any worse than Battlefront 1 did, and the graphics were not Battlefront's problem.
Like, yeah.
So, if anything, it'll be just as good as the last one graphically, with a ton more maps, modes, vehicles, champions, classes, everything. I'm so excited.
And I've said it before, but I just don't know why the gameplay in Battlefront just didn't merge well for me. Like, because again, I've said it before, like, I'm really good at Titanfall 2, but like, not to brag, just but like, I suck at Battlefront so much. So I just don't know what it is. And so, I don't know. So that took away from some of my enjoyment, because like, if I was like halfway up the list of people did in the match, I was happy in the original Battlefront. So
yeah,
not sure what about it that didn't the game, how the game was made and how it didn't flesh well with how I played or anything like that, but hopefully it's better for me this time around, because then I'll be able to enjoy it more. But even if I don't enjoy the multiplayer so much, you know, all the new maps will be free, so we'll be able to hop in and play those whenever they come out. And the single player story mode looks good enough for the price of admission alone. So,
yeah, are you planning on getting it, Ted?
I don't know. I'm not really a big buyer of brand new games. Pretty sure I've talked about that before. I've been on here. I'm really kind of like, you know, wait 6 months and then buy it on Steam for 75% off kind of guy. So it's definitely possible. I have a VR ready like computer, so it should have graphically should be enough to get me going. So it's definitely a possibility, because it's got such a great package that comes with it that it's definitely on the list.
Nice.
I could show you right now how where to get it for like $42, $45.
Pretty good. I'm more of like an under $10 kind of guy.
That makes sense.
Oh wow. It might be a while before this game drops that low on Origin, especially.
Fair.
Origin likes to keep their games pricey for a while.
No, Origin's had some really, really good sales.
I know.
Not like Steam sales.
Well, Steam has a vast library of games. Origin sales pretty much only have EA games, so
that's
a true statement. But I could find, I remember this year, like, tons of Origin games were like super ridiculously low priced in a big sale that they had. I ended up buying like 5 things.
To be fair, I haven't actually, like, I just launched Origin for the first time since I stopped playing Andromeda, so maybe I'm being a little unfair to Origin. It's a possibility. So, I pretty much only go there when I have a specific, like, Mass Effect, The Sims, or Battlefront-related itch to scratch.
That's the only reason to go there, because we would buy all the games on Steam if they were on Steam.
Pretty much.
Do we know what the DLC plan for Battlefront 2 is?
They have microtransactions, so it's all going to be free.
Definitely brings it even higher on my list.
Yeah, they're planning on releasing a number of map packs and hero packs, I'm sure, like last time. And I'm hoping maybe some single-player DLC? Question mark.
If that happened, I think that would cost. But
maybe. But hopefully it won't be like $10 or something. But yeah, all the multiplayer DLC is going to be free, because they don't want the player base to be segmented like last time. So.
Ah, fair.
And then you'll just be able to buy boxes that will unlock like weapons and things for you.
Right. Isn't Battlefront having, or this, what this, did they do the cards in the last Battlefront as well?
Not microtransaction-wise, no.
Yeah, they were different. You'd earn them based off of like experience, money, and achievements and stuff like that.
So.
Oh, crap. Why did I open Origin? Like, why do I do this to myself?
Poor choices. It's like opening Internet Explorer.
The Sims 4 is coming out with the Cats and Dogs expansion, finally. The F my life.
We won't be hearing from him for the rest of the night.
It's not out yet, luckily.
Well, speaking of Cats and Dogs, let's switch over to It.
Oh, God.
It made news again this week in the fact that it topped $500 million worldwide, making it the highest grossing horror film of all time. Ever.
It's pretty awesome.
So it totally deserves it. It was a fantastic movie. I loved it. And I'm glad to see its success. And hopefully future horror filmmakers will realize they don't just have to have a blood and guts cringe fest for it to be a horror movie. They can create a fun, good adventure movie with horror elements that can still be extremely successful. With the kids, you know. It's always those teenage kids going to see these horror movies.
Nice.
Darn kids.
Darn, we're going to be able to interview darn kids.
Did you see it, Ted?
Oh, no, not a chance. I'm the kind of guy who, if it's a jump scare at all, or even, I might see something in the corner of my eye, I have to sleep with the lights on for a week. No. I don't really put myself through that. But I appreciate the good review.
It's good. So, don't know how you could watch it without the jump scares, so I was like, if you could, I'd be like, oh, try to watch it and this, no, but that's not going to happen. So I mourn the loss of you not being able to see that movie, but I'll watch it again for you.
Although he's still trying to get me to go see it. So
yeah, just make sure all the lights are on and,
I told him that if it's like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday or Sunday, and then I can go see, Up or something right afterwards, then I'll be
go play the Sims expansion.
There you go. I'll play with the
good. Well, I bleed for you.
All right. Well, speaking of rated R hit movies, let's talk about Terminator 6.
God, 6.
Yep, Terminator 6. But it gives you a reason to be slightly excited about it. As much as we roll our eyes at James Cameron's Avatar-ness recently, Terminator 6 is going to be produced by James Cameron, creator of the first two Terminators, the good ones. And it's ignoring movies 3 through 5 completely, a.k.a. this is just going to be a sequel to Judgment Day. So
that seems like an industry turnaround, like a workaround.
Yeah. So the fact that he's behind it and he's only made good Terminator movies, and the fact they're kind of just ignoring 3 through 6, I think it's all signs point to good on this one so far. I'm also one who didn't hate the recent Terminator movie, so I'm sure I'll like it no matter what.
Nice. I'm excited for it. I've always enjoyed any of the Terminator movies that I've seen. That includes 3 and the Batman one. What was his name? Christian Bale. That weird kind of futuristic one.
Yeah.
I thought it was good enough. It was a popcorn movie to me, but so I'm excited. If they can be anywhere as good as Judgment Day, then sure, bring it on.
Bring it on!
That's right.
I gotta say that Terminator was mostly, the early ones, when I was a little bit too young to be watching rated R movies, and so then I never really got on, and then all the things I heard about the other ones were generally poor, so I'm excited about this one. It might make my list. I might have to watch the first two in order to catch up.
Have you not seen the first two?
I think I saw the first one, but it was some time ago, so
probably
a rewatch is necessary.
First one is a little bit old feeling, but it's still great. But 2 hasn't aged a day besides just the 90s aesthetic. But as far as the cinematography and the action, it could be a movie that came out today and still be good.
High rating. All right.
So it's very, very good. Well, speaking of hit rated R sci-fi films, Blade Runner comes out this week. All signs are pointing it to being very good. I think it has a really high rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I've read a couple of reviews so far. Are you guys planning on seeing it?
Yes.
Do you think I never saw the first one? So, do I need to see the first one?
I would say yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is it worth seeing?
I'm not the best on.
Not a selling point.
I'm not the best one to ask because I'm not a big fan of the original one, but I will be sci-fi crucified by my fellow sci-fi lovers for even saying that.
It's definitely.
I plan to watch it again this week in preparation for it. Watch it now a little bit older because I think I watched it in my late teens, early 20s, and I thought it was meh, but maybe I'll appreciate it more as an adult, more adult than last time.
but I'm not sure. But all signs point to, yeah, you pretty much need to see the original first.
Okay. Ted, did you already give your opinion? Sorry.
It's, of the first one, I have not. It's definitely a cult film. And so just be aware of that when you watch it.
Like Total Recall cult? Like campy sci-fi?
It's not campy at all. It takes itself very seriously.
Do you have anything to compare it to that I might have seen?
Is that hard to do? That's a good question. I don't know. It's a cross between like Star Wars and 2001 would be my best quick take on what it's mixed with.
There you go with that. It has a little bit more cultural significant elements within it.
And deep thought-provoking questions about humanity and what makes a person and stuff.
Yeah, okay, so obviously Ryan doesn't like this. I find it very fascinating.
So either I'm going to really love it or it's going to be meh, is what I'm hearing.
Like I said, you're going off of like a 13-year-old opinion of mine. I need to see it again to see if I could see. My tastes are more refined now in my later years, so maybe I'll end up liking it, but I just remember not liking it way back when I saw it. So
well, maybe we should watch it before the movie comes out.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
See how it goes. You can help keep me awake if I get bored.
No promises. But the new one has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So take that how you will. And that you'll take it very well.
Everything I've heard, granted, it's been a very limited, like Sony Select, I think it's Sony Select. I heard this from a video the other day that they selected a very specific group of people that they allowed to be in the opening press section. So it is really good press, but it's kind of like they're hand selected like press. So take that with a grain of salt. I'd like to see how the reviews go once it's open to everyone.
I think it's pretty close. There's 55 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes so far.
Right. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. We'll see.
Usually only like 100 or so, a little bit more.
Cool. Well, then maybe it's just amazing then.
Either way, movie pass. See it for free. Don't care.
Woo! I heard a funny anecdote from the set. Apparently, Harrison Ford punched Ryan Gosling in the face because he, quote, found him annoying.
Damn.
Something like that.
I don't think I believe that.
Well, it's funny either way, and I'm going to believe it because I want to, because that's how our society works today.
Oh, whoa there.
Oh. Shots.
Pressing those deep topics to hear on the Brief Nerdy podcast.
That's right. Anyway.
What is real? Are we human? What makes a human?
Or are we dancer? Anyway.
Damn it, I was about to say that.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Happy stuff only.
Since we love Game of Thrones and happy stuff is only involved with Game of Thrones, right, fellas?
Right.
Just a small bit of news this week. The final season has an insanely huge budget, which is $15 million per episode.
Holy crap.
Whoa. How many episodes were in the last season?
Six.
Seven, six.
Six two-hour movies of $15 million each.
Are they going to be two each? 2 hours each?
Oh, we don't know that. But
oh, I thought I heard that at some point. Sorry.
They said that they will be longer. We just don't know how long that is.
Fair, fair.
But, so yeah, $15 million per episode. I don't think there's going to be a lot of sitting around and talking.
No, I'm imagining it's a lot of battles.
So.
And dragons.
All the people who hated this season for the dragons and the rush pace are probably going to be even more unhappy.
Woo, unhappy.
But I loved season 7, so I'm sure I'll be happy. Huh. Speaking of unhappy, the word uncanny is kind of close to that. That's what the Unreal Engine does. I know. I'm losing them. Don't leave, audience. I'm still here. I'm still clever and funny. I promise when I want to be. So, Ted, why don't you go and take this one, the Unreal Engine one?
Dude, the Unreal Engine is making leaps and bounds with regard to graphical representation and interaction of the face, particularly human face. And I don't know if you all saw that video, but you should. Partly because their model is very nice looking, but also because of the way they do the micro expressions and the way all the muscles move on the face when one portion moves, it's absolutely incredible. And if I didn't see the cursor moving around and, you know, moving his lip one way or the other and having his eyebrows move around, I would almost think that someone was doing like facial expression practice. Like, it's phenomenal. And it means like, it's just the way that it will affect not only graphics in games, but our understanding for like purposes of Android interaction and robotics. We're seeing a huge development here, and it should be noted.
Yeah, I think it was really great looking as well. The only question I have for them is, can that be done currently in a real game versus them just focusing the entire engine and whatever hardware they have rendering that? You know, if that's only, if they're focusing all the resources onto just that face, where in current, you know, gaming, they have to render a lot more things other than that face, if it's still possible. Yeah.
Totally fair. I don't know that. I didn't see that in the article that I saw. But
either way, it's exciting for the future.
Exciting.
Because one thing the Unreal Engine does is make game development easier for others. And so if they get to the point where they could just have like that face or just realistic face animations as a built-in object for programmers to use, then pretty much every game that uses Unreal will have that or something like that built in to use at their leisure. So that's the exciting part for me.
Yeah, it's, as a tech demo, it's really impressive. The stuff that they're going to be able to do. I mean, I'm picturing, I don't know if Bethesda's ever going to use the Unreal Engine or if they do already or not. Why are you laughing at me?
Bethesda using a modern engine for their games.
You don't know. They could change in the future, but like, I just imagine games, maybe if Bethesda does it, it doesn't do it, but games like Fallout 4 or Skyrim with this kind of engine, like, holy crap. That'd be amazing. So.
It would be, but it won't happen.
Shut your whore mouth.
Engines are expensive, and Bethesda already has their homemade engine that they use.
And it will eventually catch up to this. I mean, this is just proof of eventually, concept. Yes.
Of course.
What everybody will eventually be able to do.
The other thing that this can be used for, which we actually saw kind of a preview of this earlier, was in Star Wars. We saw them recreate younger faces or people who have passed as the actors. And I could tell, because I was looking for it, that the face was computer generated. My wife could not. So we're already seeing it used in like not video game engines. So seeing this is just another progression. And the fact that it happened relatively quickly is hopefully going to be extrapolated and we can see progress quicker.
Nice.
I concur.
I agree.
So Trent, why don't you take us on to this next topic here?
So do you guys remember that story a few months back, maybe even a year or so, the Elite Dangerous players who started having alien encounters?
Yeah.
So a little bit later, the story broke that I saw on Kotaku last week, that the aliens have started killing players now rather than just like scanning them and letting them go. And so the players have found out subsequently how to fight back. However, this has led to a huge online and in-universe debate as to whether or not they should be fighting the aliens or leaving them in their own space.
And are they only attacking in alien space?
I don't know for sure. I'm not positive. It's possible, but like the argument is basically surrounding like, do we have the right to kill these things? You know, like, should we just try to run away type stuff? And I thought, I love the idea that such a complex like society exists inside of a video game where they have like these kind of questions. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing.
What do you guys think?
I love how organic it's coming along. Like, the developers just doing these little things, and this quote unquote story is changing, you know, over the course of a year or more, and it's creating real theological discussions. Does that sentence even make sense? But yeah, yeah, I think it's awesome.
It connects beautifully to Blade Runner, because then, you know, humans and what's, you know, what's morally, how do you treat those people? And, you know, just really
brings up. Is Harrison Ford a rapist, though? That's the real question.
Whoa. Yeah, so this here's interesting. It says, players have found that when they try to scan the alien ships, they receive a series of strange codes. There's an ongoing effort to decrypt them in the hopes of figuring out how to avoid getting slaughtered by the diabolical space pinwheels, or maybe attempt communication. The strangest encounter, it happened to a player named Nat, who claims that they somehow got a Thargoid ship to shut down, at which point they were able to get in close and observe it. So, yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't know. The whole thing is super interesting. Like, I really wish that I played this game and had the time to really put into it, because it seems super fun.
That is really cool. All right, well, that does it for our topics this week. And you know what that means? We're done with our topics. We go on to our listener questions. Dun, da, da. Insert theme song here. We have a handful of questions from three different people today. Trent, why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
All right. So the first couple come from my friend Annie O'Flynn. She first wanted to talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Is she okay, though?
Huh?
Is she okay?
Sure, okay, she's never heard that before. I know. Anyway, so she first wanted to talk about Star Trek Discovery. I feel like we kind of did that already earlier. Then she also wanted us to touch on the, quote, adorkable misogyny surrounding the Big Bang Theory. Now, I know that we all watched the video. Did we talk about this on the podcast with TJ?
We didn't, and I thought that was funny because TJ brought it up for us to talk about at some point, but we never got around to it.
Right. So there's a video, a really good video going around, and I think if you Google, like, adorkable misogyny Big Bang Theory, there's a guy who kind of dissects the show and really critiques its, what he calls their adorkable misogyny, and why we accept it and why we shouldn't. And so I know Ryan and I have seen this. I don't know, Ted, have you heard of this?
No, I'm looking it up now.
Sweet.
It's a longer video, so you can't just watch it right now. We're on the podcast.
So it's kind of hard to sum up also, but what are your thoughts on Big Bang Theory in general?
I find the show to be odd because it's like, I appreciate the fact that they're bringing in, like, you know, science and stuff, and then it's just awkward. And so I'm not really an awkward humor kind of person. And so I'm just, I turn on and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to be, you know, using science. And I'm like, oh, I can't finish an episode. So that's my general feeling about it.
Yeah. So it's the gist of the video that if I was going to try to boil it down into a couple sentences or less, it would be that the nerds in Big Bang Theory, like, so much of the humor derives around the fact that they try to be, like, you know, the bros of society, but fail at it because they're nerds, right? But they try to do all the misogynistic things that macho, quote unquote, macho men get away with. But we don't hate them because they're doing it. We laugh at them because they're not manly enough to do it.
Yeah.
But it still makes all of their behavior creepy and inappropriate. Not all of their behavior, but a lot of their behavior. And so it's really interesting, like, just kind of like that discussion about, like, why we think that's super funny as a society, first off, and why we let people like that get away with it. Did I miss anything, Ryan?
No, it's a very good TLD watch. Yes. of the video.
TLD watch. You should go watch, anyone who's hearing me right now, you should go watch the video and form your own opinion and let us know what you think. I'd love to hear from all of you and what you think about it.
Myself, personally, I think I both disagree and agree with it. I think the core message that he's saying it is true. So don't get me wrong there, but I think maybe about half of the examples he uses don't really drive his point. And I think the fact that he was grabbing, you know, from 10 seasons a worth of material and he could only like find those to use as examples, I think doesn't give a lot of credibility to what he's saying, even though I agree with what he's saying, so to speak. Don't really know if I'm coming off clear there. But at the same time, and not to think less of the misogynistic tendencies the show has, I think the show has a billion problems, and that's just pointing out one of them.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, just...
My biggest beef with the show... Sorry, did I interrupt you?
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. There was a lull. I didn't know if I was lagging. My personal problem has always been that the show, like, yes, it introduces a bit of nerd culture, but it always seems to somehow make, at least the ones that I've seen, it makes nerd culture the butt of the joke rather than the vehicle of the joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm not a big fan of that because, like, it's my culture that they're using as the butt of the joke, so... Mm-hmm.
And characters like Howard, you know, he's definitely the most misogynistic character. Gross and creepy the entire time, but that's the joke. So are you more offended of, you know, the way he treats women or the way that a nerd is interpreted as, you know, oh, look, nerds are weird when it comes to girls and, you know, or is it gross what he's doing? You know, I think that's just what came to my mind, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean... I think that Howard's definitely the creepiest. I think Sheldon, who's the star of the show, is actually the most sexist.
Oh, 100%.
The things that he outright says about women in that show are pretty despicable, but everyone, you know, everyone laughs. It's like, oh, he doesn't understand social norms. He doesn't know why he's say. He doesn't know what he's saying isn't funny, but haha, it's funny.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
It's a whole thing. So yeah, so one problem of many. That, but, you know,
just don't watch Big Bang Theory.
Seriously, watch anything else that's on at the same time. It needs to be dethroned. Unless you love it, and despite of all of its flaws, and you, you love what you love. So,
Ben Helmers,
my really good friend. Wants us to first talk about our favorite horror/Halloween flicks. We touched a little bit about on this last time we talked about, well, not last time, but recently, with our like Halloween traditions. But why don't you, Ted, go ahead and start us off with this one.
Yeah, obviously I'm not a jump scare guy, right? So it makes my Halloween or scary movies significantly fewer. My number one that I go to almost every year is A Nightmare Before Christmas. I know some people say it's a Christmas movie. I think it's more of a Halloween movie. So it's nice. It's easy. It has, you know, slightly scary subject. It's not really that scary. So I go to it every year.
Nice. How about you, Ryan?
For me, I'll do the short answer and just say Hocus Pocus.
That's a good one.
But outside that, I have a fun kind of story along with Halloween. That it's definitely not a Halloween movie, but it kind of became, it's not really a tradition, but like just a running joke in my family and amongst friends from my early childhood. So at one point, I think I was like maybe 10 or 11. I was planning on having this big Halloween like sleepover at my house, Halloween night. We were all going to come to my house. We were all going to go trick-or-treating together, come back and watch a movie and eat popcorn and ice cream, play some video games, and then crash, you know, whenever 10-year-olds crash when I had a sleepover, call it a day. And so I don't know what my mom was thinking, but she went out to go rent a movie for us, and obviously we were 10-ish years old, so I'm not sure like what she expected to get when she went to the video store, but she did not bring back a scary movie. She brought back the movie Warriors of Virtue. Do either of you know what that movie is?
What's it called?
Warriors of Virtue.
No.
Okay, it was like an early 90s show about these like kids. I only saw it then, so don't quote me if I'm getting some of these details wrong. But it's about these like teenage-year-old kids who like get tossed into another dimension, and there's these like kangaroo people who know kung fu.
Okay.
Did you Google it?
Yeah, I'm on it right now. I'm very confused.
I'm just letting you describe it. It's more fun in my head.
Yeah. So we watched that, but it's needless to say, it's a terrible, terrible movie. I'm sure TJ's listening to this screaming at me and how it's a wonderful movie for some reason. Because it just has that early 90s crappy camp. But no, it was terrible. And my friends like never let me hear the end of it for years. Like they were so excited for like this Halloween party and we ended up watching Warriors. It turned into good fun. You know, we just laughed at the movie and how dumb it was the whole time, even as 10-year-olds. And then we played Mario Kart 64 and everything was good. But nice. You know, just every now and then they'd be like, hey, remember the scariest movie ever? Warriors of Virtue? So
nice. So yeah. I've said before, my Halloween tradition has become Practical Magic, Hocus Pocus, and that's thanks to Ben. And then Zombieland, which is also thanks to Ben. So I try to watch all three of those in the month of October, just for funsies.
Recently we watched Practical Magic. What draws you to that movie? Pretty much for me, it's Sandra Bullock. But other than that, I wasn't particularly stoked about it.
Well, Sandra Bullock is one of my favorite actresses ever. And I've always just had kind of a fascination with witchcraft in general. Like I've always loved like the magical character in any show, like so Willow from Buffy, the Charmed show, the Craft. Mm-hmm. I love that movie growing up. So I've always just kind of loved like witchcraft and just like the themes and the feel and all that stuff. And so I mean, it's definitely, you know, kind of a semi-serious, semi-silly rom-com. You know, but with some really good actresses in it. So you didn't like it? Is that what you're saying?
I was either hoping for more magic or more rom-com. Yeah. And I thought it kind of just was like in between and kind of didn't really do either. And so it was like a weird middle ground for me.
Yeah, the theme of the movie is really sisterhood. Sisterhood among friends, you know, sisterhood among your family.
Did they have traveling pants?
No, there were no pants. Well, I mean, there were pants, but...
Oh, I was about to say, well, this is the movie I need to see. No pants, huh?
Well, yeah, and it's funny to me, I'm thinking about it, because, like, as a rom-com, like, I don't really find any of the guys that attractive. Mm-hmm. So that's always funny that I look back and realize that. But, yeah, I mean, I love the relationship that the two sisters have. I love the relationship that the two crazy aunts have. I don't know. It's just always been kind of fun. Like I watched it, you know, when I was a teenager and just kind of, it just became a thing that I really enjoyed watching. So.
Fair enough. Maybe I'll rewatch it with the idea that sisterhood is the theme rather than rom-com or magic.
There you go. And it makes the thing at the end with the circle and the phone tree and all that stuff a lot funnier and kind of neater as well. The newer one that is actually thanks to my friend Petra, that's actually kind of scary, because I don't really consider any of those three that I mentioned to be horror films. And one that you should definitely watch with you is Trick or Treat. Yes. Hello?
Yeah, Trick or Treat.
Sorry, my computer lagged again. But yeah, it's a 2007 anthology horror film. And it shows like four different seemingly unconnected like events that are happening throughout Halloween. And it's got this, you know, creepy little kid in like a, you know, jack-o'-lantern kind of outfit walking around. Dude,
that cover art is terrifying.
Right? So it's not very jump scare heavy at all. It's far from the scariest movie I've ever seen, but it's definitely a horror movie. You should watch it with Petra, our good friend, and she
put
will
the lights on.
With that, she will be thrilled to watch this with you. So
I want to give a special shout out to the Disney Channel original movie Halloween Town.
There you go.
So, as a honorable mention on this list we're making.
There you go. So then our next question from Ben is the favorite Super Nintendo title not included in the classic SNES release that just came out.
I'm going to go with, even though it has Donkey Kong Country on there, I'm going to go with Donkey Kong Country 2. It was my favorite of all the Donkey Kong Country games. So Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Conquest would be mine.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Did you just now get that pun?
No, I've gotten the pun forever.
Okay.
Oh my god, how have I never noticed this?
It was a pretty good chuckle, so I was like, oh, I think I was speaking with someone else recently that thought it was Diddy Kong's Quest.
Oh, and not yeah.
Diddy's Conquest.
Yeah.
So it blew their mind, so.
Yeah, good stuff. Do you have one, Ted?
I actually don't, because I never really got into the SNES. I was a Sega, and then I know I went to Sega, and then I went straight to N64.
So you will love Sonic Mania.
Well, you're a little bit younger, right? So, like, wasn't 64 like your peak gaming console when you were a kid?
I'm a little bit younger than that. It was Xbox.
Crap.
Xbox was the main one. I did a little bit of Dreamcast, and the Sega Genesis and N64 were really my brother. So I was playing those when I was like, you know, 6.
Oh, so. Man.
Well, that'll lead into our next question, but until then, Trent, what about you?
So the one that I know for sure is not there that I played the crap out of with my brother when I was a kid is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
Turtles in Time game.
It's funny. That's the exact one Maggie picked, because I actually picked up mine today. And so nice. When she's looking at the box, she's like, oh, it doesn't have Turtles in Time.
I love that game. Like, I just remember, like, the whole bury my shell at wounded knee pun that I totally didn't understand as a kid. So, like, in U.S. history class, we learned about the Battle of Wounded Knee, and I was like, oh, that's what that means.
Aha!
My U.S. history teacher was not thrilled with me bringing up Super Nintendo games.
Suddenly. Yeah, I bet not. He's like, yes, anyway. Wounded knee, and you were like, bury my shell at wounded knee. And she's like, what?
I have a totally off-topic but semi-relevant story.
Go for it.
As a kid, I wasn't really aware of North Korea, you know, in the early to mid-2000s, so to speak. But then the 007 movie World Is Not Enough came out, and it heavily involved North Koreans in it as the villains. And, like, literally that week in school, we started talking about North Korea in a history class. And I was like, you know. I know them.
They're the Bond villains.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So then our last question comes from, if I can get back to the notes.
Spencer Dixon.
Yes, my friend Spencer, who asks, SNES Classic, yay or nay? And then retro throwbacks and Nintendo's new business models of making retro consoles, mobile devices, etc.
I give this a hard yay.
Ooh, a hard yay.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with someone else. I don't think there exists in the history of video games a better video game collection, in a single purchase, so to speak, you know, than the SNES Classic.
Nice.
There are probably over 10 games on there that are probably my top 50 games of all time. I would say, I mean, just kind of estimating, I didn't pick exactly some of the top 50 games of all time, but when you have things like Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Final Fantasy VI, Donkey Kong Country, like all in one single package, like that's pretty much the best value you could ever get for buying a collection of games. And not only that, you get the two controllers, which are exactly the same controllers that the games were originally made for, and just a fun little mini SNES. If, you know, that's your bag too. So I think it's highly, highly worth it. And for those who aren't heavily into piracy and doing ROMs and emulators and things like that, it's perfect for them. And also for me in particular, buying one for my nephews, you know, they've never experienced these games before, and they had a lot of fun with the NES Classic, and I'm ready for their minds to be blown with the Super NES Classic.
Nice.
So that's my take. That's, and Teddy, need one too. If you haven't played most of these games, you need it.
Okay, I will. I'll put on the list. My list grows longer every time I get on this show.
And per game, it's less than $10 a piece. $10 a piece. So it fits the $10 game rule.
Now you're speaking my language, Trent. Yeah, I would say with regard to this trend, obviously the trend has so far been mostly with games that I'm not, nostalgic for. But if they started doing things like, if they're going through their generation list, if we start seeing N64 games, like I have an original N64 in my house. The problem is that my TV is now very relatively high resolution and the system is not. And so when I plug it in, it's like horrid graphics. Like I can't even see them. I can't see the characters. Yeah. And so because everything's stretched and distorted. So if they come out with an N64 with the whole pack of, the best games and it works with my TV, yeah, I'd probably buy it and I'd probably go for it. So
fun fact, there's like a little $60 like up converter device that you could plug in SD sources to and it converts it into a nice clean HD format. Obviously the games don't render in like 1080p, but it just makes it look at its 240p or whatever resolution the N64 was, better, or just at least sharp and clean on a HDTV versus plugging it in directly.
Holy crap. I'm looking at the games in the SNES pack for the first time.
Right?
There's so many that I want to play.
Right?
Like, my brother and I played Contra until we beat it, which was really hard back then because video games were actually difficult. But like, freaking Kirby Superstar is my favorite Kirby dream, or my favorite Kirby game ever. Mega Man X, Mario RPG, like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's the best collection of games of all time, in my opinion.
Amazing.
And the thing that about it versus the NES Classic, the NES Classic had, a few dozen really good games, but not all of them have aged well enough to play in a modern setting. I mean, as great as the original Metroid was at its time, it's not really easy to go back and play now. I think TJ and I talked about that we'd much rather play the remake on Game Boy Advance, Metroid Zero Mission. And a lot of the games are like that, but I feel the Super Nintendo hit the pinnacle of two-dimensional gaming. Games like Super Metroid, Zelda Link to the Past, Donkey Kong Country can be played as if they came out today, maybe as like more indie titles, but they still play really, really, really well.
And, yeah, they don't look that different from like Hollow Knight, for example.
Yeah.
Or other games like that.
And the fact it comes with features like save states and even like a rewind feature where you could rewind like back 30 seconds to try something again without getting hit or whatever.
That's pretty cool.
It has a rewind feature.
Yeah, so definitely need to get it. And to all of you listening, you need to get it too. It's wonderful.
Is it possible to get? How the store's been?
I don't know. I haven't looked because I got mine. So I haven't been paying attention. So
cool. Maybe I'll go to Best Buy sometime this week after work.
But yeah.
So that does it for all of our viewer questions. Well, thank you so much for those being submitted. Feel free to always drop by our Facebook page, Twitter, or send us an email at briefnerdity@gmail.com or go to briefnerdity.com to check out everything we're doing. And we'd love to see you guys again next week.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.